Wednesday, June 1st, 2022. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying healthy. You're all staying strong right now. And yes, it is already June. I mean, summer is like upon us already. And I know that is going to get into a little bit of a slow stretch here in sports. Never fear, here at the Daily Dose, we're going to keep things exciting. We're going to be bringing you new things every single week. So while sports might be a little bit slow, don't forget to keep tuning in to the Daily Dose because we're going to keep some things fresh for you. You're going to still get some good sports talk here. And you know, it's kind of interesting because at least here in the United States, this week, we're on a short week. Memorial Day was on Monday. So most of us had that day off, and now we've got a four-day work week here. But can someone please tell me why these short weeks seem to last a few months? I mean, it's only 4 days, right? It doesn't make any sense. But it's only Wednesday today, and it's going to be Wednesday, and it's probably going to be Thursday for, I don't know, like a long, long time. Just so you know, just kind of be prepared. These four-day weeks always seem to be a little bit longer. They seem to be a little bit more challenging. I don't know if it's like a hangover from the long weekend or if it's just we try to cram 5 days worth of work into a four-day work week. I don't know which it is. I just know this. Be prepared. This might be a little bit of a long week. Today and tomorrow might stretch out for a much, much longer time. Hopefully, the Daily Dose can help you through a little bit of that time. Hey, before we jump in today, I just want to remind you, make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast. We have links to the video. Yes, we even have links to that Daily Dose gear. We've got t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, whatever you may need. You can find links to that over at DailyDoseSports.com. Make sure you're stopping by and checking out what we have going up there every week. We've got new sports articles coming out every single week, so you got to make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com. Hey, today on the show, I told you last week, we have something very, very different for you. You know, I was fortunate enough to be joined by a very special guest. And I'm just telling you right now, we have a lot of ground to cover today with him. So let's get over to our conversation right now. Joining us today on the Daily Dose, we have a guest that I'm really looking forward to. And I'll tell you why. Because he has a lot of passion for his hometown teams. And if you know me, you know I am very much the same way, except that this guy has endured way more pain than I ever have because he is a Cleveland sports fan. Phil Barth is the author of a couple of books. He wrote a book called Great Things Happen Every Day, Finding Joy with Family, Friends, and Banana Milkshakes. And he also wrote a book called Hard to Believe Land, A Look Inside the Mind of Cleveland Sports. I want to talk about both these books today, but first, I would like to welcome author Phil Barth to the Daily Dose.
Thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this for a while.
Phil, I have so many things that I want to talk to you about today, but I'm going to lead off with an easy softball for you. Maybe it's not so easy. I don't know. What is like the first kind of sports memory that you have as a kid?
The Cleveland Indians were the first one I remember. Okay. I don't know why, other than I might have seen them on TV, but it was, I first learned about the Indians and the Browns and the Cavaliers in that order. And I remember getting baseball cards with my great grandpa would take me to the store and give me some money to buy a pack of baseball cards and organizing them out. And actually there was one before that. Now that I think about it, the very first memory was we have an amusement park in Northern Ohio called Cedar Point.
Sure.
And parents would take us over there. And one night they said I could get a plastic batting helmet. And I went to the stand that sold the plastic batting helmets, and they had Cleveland Indians or Detroit Tigers. And so the choice it was, did I want the C or the D? Right. You know, the D that like Magnum PI wears,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I liked the C better. And that's how it all got started. Because at the time, we were like halfway between Cleveland and Detroit. Okay. And most of my friends like Cleveland. I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
And that's just where it started. And I love my little plastic batting helmet that should never be used in any sport, right? They crack right away.
Right. I got one of those too. I remember I got one of those at a Denver Bears game, which tells you going back quite a ways.
Nice. Yeah. So that's the first. It was the Cleveland Indians and then the Browns and then the Cavaliers.
Okay. So growing up, were you playing sports yourself? And if so, what were you playing or what were you doing as a kid?
We lived out in the country, so I didn't really have a lot of opportunities. I played some baseball. I was much better at watching baseball than playing baseball. I love the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always say I could have been a really good baseball player if I could have run faster, hit better, and thrown faster. Other than that, I had everything, right? Except for I couldn't field real well either.
Other than that, though. But,
right there. So I did in high school. I ran cross country. That was about it. That where my strength was.
Well, you've got to have some mental strength to run cross country. No question about that. So growing up, your Indians, your Browns, your Cavs. Who are the guys that you're looking at and saying those are the players that I am watching everything they do? You're imitating the way they walk. You're imitating the way they shoot. Who were the guys for you that you were looking at as your sports heroes growing up?
So the first one, the problem with the Indians, I'm going to be frank, back then was you had to get a new hero about every 3 years because they'd trade him away. Yeah. But the first one I remember was Greg Nettles, and before he got traded to New York, and that I would pretend I was Greg Nettles with a hat, and there was this game where the Indians played the Twins. And Jim Nettles, Greg's brother, played center field and robbed him of a home run. And you know, nowadays you'd be like, cool, my brother made a great – Greg Nettles was pissed. He was mad. And he took his batting helmet and threw it across the field. And that was how I ruined my Cedar Point batting helmet imitating Greg Nettles all the way to throwing the thing. And it hit the grass and cracked. So, Greg Nettles is the first one I remember. Football, Greg Pruitt played for the Browns.
Yeah.
My dad was a big Pruitt fan. My dad was kind of short and played a little football when he was growing up. So he can relate to Greg Pruitt, kind of short and quick guy. And so we watched him when he played for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And so when he got drafted by Cleveland, I was like, this is cool. And then he was really fun to watch.
Really, really explosive. Yeah. He was a great player.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
What about basketball? Who are you watching with the Cavs?
So the Cavaliers were awful for the first five years I knew them. And then all of a sudden in 1976, they went on this playoff run. And they made the playoffs and came really close to the NBA Finals. They lost to the Celtics in the semis. Right. And it was called the Miracle of Richfield. And they didn't have any superstar. They had Jim Jones, Bingo Smith, Dick Snyder, I got him, Campy Russell, and Jim Clemens. And I'm going to shout out to Jim Clemens as my favorite because I've got a picture of him holding up my book, Hard to Believe.
Oh, wow.
He's a neighbor of a friend of mine. And he left me a message. He recorded a message saying how much they worked together as a team in 76 and there was no one star. And it's true. They all worked together. And so I don't really remember a single star out of that, just liking them all.
Well, and how could you not? Because like you said, a group that when basketball is great, it is five people moving as one. And I don't know that there's another sport that can kind of recreate the way that flow is other than basketball in that regard. I'm going to kind of dig down on a couple of sports memories for you. And I apologize in advance. I swear I'm not trying to twist the knife. I'm really not. I got to get some thoughts on a few different things.
Here it comes. Okay.
What do you remember? What do you remember about Red Right 88?
Red Right 88 was the play that Brian Sipe called against the Oakland Raiders in the first round of the 1980 playoffs. Cardiac kids were just everybody's favorite because, you know, every game they would be down or tied and he would pull it out. And they were doing the same thing to Oakland. That was the play they called. And the play called for him to either throw it to somebody who was open or throw it in Lake Erie.
Yes.
And he did neither. He threw it to Mike Davis, the Raiders safety.
Unfortunately, that's exactly what he did. Here's a question for you. Do you remember watching that game?
Every second of it.
Do you really?
Every second. I was absolutely stunned because it was like they stopped Oakland on a fourth and short and they got the ball back. And it's like, oh my God, here we go again. He's going to pull another one out. This is going to be so cool. And it went all the way down the field, all the way down the field. And he threw that interception. I was like, what the heck just happened here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a bizarre end to a game too, because like you said, Sipe had been doing everything right. They stop Mark Van Egan. They get the ball back. They're going to do it again. They're going to do it again. Now, as a little kid, I'm cheering for you. I hate the Raiders. Right. I'm cheering like crazy for you. I died a little bit that day too, because I'm sitting there going, come on, you were going to take down the Raiders who I couldn't stand.
I know.
Just absolutely painful. Okay, coming back, I want to get Phil's thoughts on a couple of other infamous plays in Cleveland history. You know, plays like the drive, plays like the fumble, plays like the shot. I want to know how he feels about the Cleveland Indians changing their name to the Cleveland Guardians. And I want to see how Cleveland Browns fans are feeling about bringing in Deshaun Watson. We still have a lot to get to today with Phil Barth on the Daily Dose. Okay, we're going to go a little further.
Here we go.
Phil, what do you remember during the drive?
The drive. Okay, first thing I want to say, the worst one was Red Right 88, because it was the first time ever had our hearts cut out and handed to it.
I would agree with that. I understand.
I mean, now as a fan, you know, they if the Indians blow something, or I'm sorry, the Guardians now, whatever.
Right.
If they blow the game, right, it's like, You get this expectation, like, okay, it's going to happen, right? But not that time. What I remember about the drive was every time Elway got flushed out of the pocket, he hit somebody downfield for 25 yards. And I'm like, will you just not let him get on the run? Because he was deadly. And the other thing I remember about it, and Cleveland fans will back me up on this, but nobody else will, the game-winning field goal was wide left.
It's so funny. I have my next question was, did you think the game-winning field goal was good? I did not. I thought he missed it.
I thought it was wide left. And I always say, you know, I don't understand how the referee who was standing right under the goalpost could have not seen that it was wide left when me sitting on the TV miles away could see. Yeah, but it was over the top of the goalpost. So you don't know.
Now,
but
I will say this. I saw at one point, I saw a fan had taken some home video from the end zone. And that was the first time I went, I think it might have been good. Because when he kicked, now, to be fair, I hated Rich Carlos. He was the most inconsistent kicker ever. Everybody talked about his bare foot. It gives him a better feel. Well, then how come you only made about 50% of your kicks? But when he kicked it, he missed it. He missed it. We're still going to lose. So I totally feel your pain. And the way he kicked it, when I see that still to this day, I go, that doesn't look good. And the only thing that made me feel better was all the Broncos started jumping around. Was the only thing, because I was like, he missed it. I can't. Why are they celebrating?
Yep. Yeah. And I'm sure it was too high for you for you to see.
Right.
I'm sure you could see if you're standing right underneath it.
Yeah.
Where it went. But yeah, I thought we had second life, but was not to be.
No, unfortunately, it wasn't. Is there any, are there hard feelings towards Marty Schottenheimer and the way he kind of coached, you know, some of those games against Denver?
No.
You've just impressed me with your intelligence right there. Thank you for that answer. Continue, but just impressed me.
I have no hard feelings with Marty Schottenheimer whatsoever, and here's why. If you fast forward, and I know you're going to want to come back to the fumble, and we'll get there. But if you fast forward to 1989, right? 88. I'm sorry. So 87, 86 was the drive. 87 was the fumble. 88 was Marty Schottenheimer coaching. Bernie Kosar gets hurt in game one. Gary Danielson, the backup quarter, breaks his leg and is out for the season in game two. Mike Hagel comes in and takes over.
Right.
And then a little while later, Kozar's back. He gets hurt again, is out for the season. Pagel takes over and he gets hurt. And their quarterback at the end of the year was Don Strock, who was like selling used cars in Miami or something at the start of the year, 38 years old. And Marty Schottenheimer got that team to the playoffs.
Yes.
And his reward for that was Modell brought him in and said, if you don't get an offensive coordinator, I'm going to fire you. He said, I don't need an offensive coordinator. And Modell fired him. I have more hard feelings than we can fit in this room toward Art Modell for a variety of very good reasons. But, I mean, what coach today, probably Belichick, but what coach besides him is going to be able to go through four quarterbacks and still make the playoffs?
None of them. No, yeah. Marty is such an underrated coach. His players loved him, and his players played their guts out for him.
Yep.
Won everywhere he went. And I am convinced, and maybe you are as well, that the Chargers are snake bit because they fired him after going like 14-2. And so they are still paying for those sins even now.
Should be.
Yes, they absolutely should be. They completely deserve it. No, Marty was a really, really good coach who had the unfortunate luck or whatever you call it of having to face John Elway. And that's a tough draw for anybody.
Exactly. Exactly.
It just is.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's jump a year forward. Lost in the ending of the fumble is the fact that Ernest Biner was playing like the game of his life.
Yes.
15 carries, 67 yards. He has 7 catches, 120 yards. He has a touchdown and he's about to get another one and lightning strikes.
Yeah.
Do you remember the play? Do you remember watching the game?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Had a group of friends over. And so we said, hey, let's make it fun. Let's all throw quarters in and have a $25 score pool. I don't know. There was a dozen of us. So we each threw some bucks in. And then you drew the numbers, you know, like you do for the Super Bowl. Only right. It was $25, winner take all. And I had Denver 8, Cleveland 1. So Cleveland's driving. It's 38-31. They're driving. And then he fumbles. And you know, most of the guys are Cincinnati fans. Don't really have a lot of love for Cleveland. And so they're giving me a little grief. I'm like, well, I say, at least I'm going to win the $25. And then Denver took an elective safety.
Yes, they did.
So the good news on all that is you fast forward 2 weeks and Denver is playing. I think that's the year they played San Francisco in the Super Bowl.
It's the year they played Washington in the Super Bowl.
I thought Washington was.
Giants after the drive, Washington after the fumble, San Francisco after more of the blowout last year.
Okay, so I guess I had to wait a year for my revenge.
Well, no, you got it later, against Washington. Washington, to me, is still the most painful of all the Super Bowls.
No, I mean my financial revenge.
Oh, okay, you got it back?
Oh, yeah. So what happens is a year later, we're all gathered together, and it was a $10 square pool.
Oh,
and
wow.
My buddy, the guy who won the $25, yeah, has San Francisco 8, Denver 0. I have San Francisco 5. Denver 0. And you probably remember the game.
I did.
But right. I mean, it's late in the, it's middle fourth quarter. And San Francisco is not going to run up the score. And there's some turnover. I don't know if it was a fumble or what. And my 8-0 buddy who won the $25.
48-10.
Yeah. He's planning on how he's going to spend. And it was like, I mean, it paid on the score changes, but it was $300 to $400.
Oh wow.
And he's planning on how he's going to spend it. And they ran that fumble back to the 2 and then punched it in. I'm like, well, you got the 25 anyway last year.
Right, right. So, don't forget the 25 you did get. Ernest Biner was a really good player, too. I always felt so bad that people remembered him for that instead of how great he was, because he really was a hard-nosed running back.
Yeah, and like an 11th-round draft choice, something like that.
Yeah.
Late pick. Yeah, and they traded him to Washington for Mike Oliphant, who never did anything.
Never did anything. Meanwhile, yeah, he went and won a Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, I always liked Ernest Biner. And I was upset at the time. But, you know, you got to look, like you said, how many catches that day, how many carries. He was just playing out of his head and one bad break.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, you know, especially in sports, we always want to declare kind of that narrative of well, you won, so you're the winner, and you lost, well, you're the loser. No, you got to look a little bit at the nuance of sometimes of the game. I understand Brady's won, you know, 100 Super Bowls, but there were a little more at play sometimes in some of those games, and so many people don't think to look at that. So when I'll ask you an uncomfortable question. When Denver goes to these Super Bowls, are you just blatantly rooting against them? Are you just hating on the Broncos as they go to these Super Bowls? Or are you? I don't blame you. I would too.
Not anymore. Not anymore. I mean, right. But and you know, if Denver had played, let's say, Pittsburgh or, God forbid, the Ravens in the conference championship, I would be a Denver fan all day and all night.
Sure.
So, yeah. I mean, I don't begrudge – Elway was a great player, and I don't begrudge him winning his Super Bowls eventually. So, and I got no hatred for Denver now. I reserve that, like I said, for Pittsburgh, New England, and Baltimore, like all good Cleveland fans.
Right, right. No, I could appreciate that. You know, it's funny because here in Denver, obviously, we didn't have the bitterness. We all kind of, like, cheered for Cleveland. Like, hey, I hope Cleveland does well this year. We didn't have that kind of, but we didn't get our hearts ripped out, you know, by Cleveland. So we were always like, hey, they were kind of the guys that almost got it done. And so we always kind of, you know, looked at Cleveland like, oh, you know, I wish they do well, but we also didn't endure the pain that you had to endure.
Like I said, I got over it. I don't know that I'll ever get over Belichick and
that's
another story for another day.
No, I completely understand. And Modell is a different story for another day, I guess, as well. Cause I don't know. Like, I look at our owners here with Colorado Rockies, and then we've had a mess with the Broncos after Pat Bowlen and, you know, passed and everything. We can't hold a candle to what Art Modell did. That's a whole different animal there. I mean,
no,
you kind of won a Super Bowl. Yeah, I mean, they just did it in different laundry, but you, and in a different city, but you did.
Yeah, no.
No, that's a different level of pain right there.
Oh yeah, and he took Ozzie Newsome with him, so Ozzie could build the team, and yeah.
So is that who it is then? Is it the Ravens that is villain number one for Cleveland fans?
Yeah, it's probably the Ravens. The Steelers are close just because we've got that long, long history. And because of Belichick leaving Cleveland, you know, admittedly it was the whole team left. But they had Belichick. They had Nick Saban as a defensive coordinator and Ozzie Newsome in the front office.
Yeah.
And how many championships have those men won over the years? So
that's just unfair.
So yeah, it's probably Baltimore. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but the year before the Browns moved to Baltimore, they traded their first round pick, number 10 overall, to San Francisco for number 30, and San Francisco's pick in the next draft. Okay. Number 30 wound up to be Craig Powell, linebacker, did nothing. San Francisco got nothing out of number 10. The next year, that pick was Ray Lewis for the Baltimore Ravens.
Again, it's just insult to injury at this point.
So we set them up. You know, it's like, okay, you're going to get Jonathan Ogden with your first round pick, but you're going to need more than that. So here's one for Ray Lewis.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. This is making my stomach hurt. Let's move over to the Indians, because I know that you are a big Cleveland Indians fan. In fact, it looks like you've got a couple of bats back there. Those don't happen to be any Indians bats.
The only one that's an Indian bat is Casey Blake on the bottom.
Okay.
The top two are significantly better players. Casey's a great player. I love Casey. The top one is Hank Aaron, and the middle one is Willie Mays.
What?
So,
Phil, Willie Mays, in my book, is the greatest baseball player who's ever played.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, and I wasn't alive in 1954 to see him rob Vic Wertz, but yeah, he's amazing. But so this goes back, I don't know, 25, 30 years. Sam's Club used to have autographed sports memorabilia, and they decided they were getting out of the business. And so we walk in there, and they got all this stuff on sale, dirt cheap.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy crap, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, are you kidding me? I bought both the bats. And they sat in storage in a closet for 25 years. And a couple years ago, during the pandemic, I made a project and put them up finally. But yeah.
What's the top? It looks like a hockey stick at the top. What do you have there?
Hockey stick is just one I happen to find at a thrift shop. It's okay. Autographed by the Cincinnati Stingers World Hockey Association team from the mid-70s. Very and the nice. Only name I recognized was Barry Melrose, the guy who rocks
well,
the
sure. The, yeah, yeah, he's yeah. the guy, though. I like it. Okay, let's move over to those Indians, and we'll get around to calling them, you know, something else here in a minute. 2016, the Indians go to the series. They face another hard luck team. They face the Chicago Cubs. In 97, the Indians go to the World Series. They face the Florida Marlins. They both go 7 games. Game 7 could have gone either way in both series. Which one hurts more?
I'm gonna say the Marlins simply because it happened first. You know, the last two teams to lose Game 7 in extra innings in the World Series, Indians and Indians, both of them were in extra innings. The Marlins, I was actually on the phone with my brother in the ninth inning because we wanted to celebrate the Indians winning World Series together.
Sure.
And of course, they tied it up against Jose Mesa. And then 3 innings later, it beat Charlie Nagy. I watched the replay of that, and Tony Fernandez was playing second. And he booted a ball that led to the win for the Marlins. And it was just like the camera just kept on him in the dugout and him elsewhere. Just like this is his whole face on TV. I'm like, leave the dude alone. Right. We're talking about the narrative again. It's like, come on. I mean, this guy played a great second base for the Indians that year. He made one error. I mean, was I disappointed? Of course I was. But come on, you know.
Yeah.
So that one hurt a lot. The Cubs won, I don't know, maybe it was the Cubs one. I'm not sure, because they had 116 years or however long it had been.
And sure.
I don't know. The Cubs one was worse because a few days later, it was between the Cubs and the election of 2016, I run into a couple people at a party my in-laws were having. And so the guy, he'd love to debate politics. I don't want to debate politics. So who do you think is going to win? Let's talk about the election. I'm like, I don't want to talk about the election. So I say, smart guy that I am, well, it won't be the Browns this week. And as soon as I was out of my mouth, I was like, oh, crap. The Cubs fans. And he's like, speaking of the
No.
Like, what'd you think of that World Series? I'm like, are you kidding me? And then I'm telling him, well, obviously I turned it off as soon as it was over. And his wife says, oh, you didn't stay and watch the post game? Bill Murray was talking. I'm like, yeah, I was going to sit there and watch the Cubs celebrate. Was it?
Right.
It was in Cleveland. Yeah, because they had the rain.
Yeah.
On. I'm like, no, I didn't. And they had wine at my in-laws place, fortunately. But yeah. Yeah, it's just like, so they twisted the knife. So I don't know. Maybe it is the Cubs. I don't know. They both hurt.
They both have to hurt. Those were both. And both of them, I do remember the 97, but 16, that game 7, you want to talk about a game that just swung back and forth, such huge swings of momentum.
They were down what, 5-1?
Yes.
And I told my kids, if they come back and win this, I'm going to get a Chief Wahoo tattoo. And I was looking up tattoo artists there for a minute.
You were getting close. You were getting really close. We've kind of
hit that home run. I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow. We've kind of skirted around it, but I've got to ask you this. How are you with the change to the nickname? And now you are the Cleveland Guardians. And I know it's going to take a long time for that to really set in. Do you like the Guardians? Are you on board with the Guardians? How do you feel about this whole Guardians thing?
I'm a big fat whatever.
Really?
Obviously, I'm not a Native American.
Sure.
I had a friend that passed away a while ago, Native American, and he loved the Indians.
Yeah.
I don't know that he was crazy about the Chief Wahoo logo, but he loved the fact that they had the name Cleveland Indians.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he would love to go to Cleveland and cheer for the Indians.
Right.
So, yeah, I can see why they got rid of the Chief Wahoo logo, but I start wearing Cleveland and it's the, where is it? It's the Wild Thing jersey with the.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, beautiful. I love it.
So, yeah, whatever they want to do, it's the Dolan's team. And I'm really not going to complain about that because they have provided a front office and talent on a limited budget that has either the best or second best record in the American League over the past decade, behind the Dodgers in the majors, I think. So they have done more with less than any franchise I know. So if they want to call it Guardians, I'll still root for it.
Okay. I just wondered about that, and I completely understand it. We're gonna change teams yet again, because we've gone through some NFL, we've gone through some Major League Baseball. In fact, I was telling Phil before we started recording, I've got this picture up here that a listener actually sent me of, you can see if you're watching the video, Michael Jordan hitting the shot against Craig Elo and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Ooh. What do you remember about that 1989 Game 5 in the Eastern Conference first round of the playoffs?
So I remember being up at my parents' with my fiance at the time, wife now, okay, and just watching the game. And, you know, the Cavaliers had swept 6-0 the Bulls in the regular season. So it was 2-2, and the game was going back and forth. And I'm thinking, okay, they got him. Yeah. You know, they got him here. And they hit that shot. And I was just like, oh, crap. And it was all, you know, kind of moody. My fiance's like, really? Over a game? I'm like, oh, she's learned now. It's like, yeah, that's how he is. So I remember thinking, how did that happen? I mean, obviously, Michael Jordan, there's a debate. We'll just say greatest or second greatest basketball player of all time. So, yeah, I mean, they put their best defender on him. He had the hand right there, and Jordan hit the shot. Yeah. Now, I have the luxury of how many years that it's in the rearview mirror being, you know, all, well, it is what it is. At the time, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and people kind of forget, same thing with Ernest Biner. People kind of forget, Elo was the one that hit the shot to put you guys up. Elo had been your greatest defender. Elo had played out of his mind and was playing on a bum ankle, if I remember right. So he's kind of defending Mike on one leg. It's not that easy. Yeah, people, again, we have short memories in sports for things like that. We don't remember too much nuance. We remember Jordan hit the shot. I will always remember, more so than Elo misplaying him, I want to say it might have been Nance or Doherty that came over to double him and completely overplayed him. That was the mistake in my book.
I had forgotten about that, but you're absolutely right. I'm not sure which one it was, but there was a double they were going to put on him. And yeah, that's what happened.
Gave him the back cut. And then you're you know, hoping that Craig Elo can somehow elevate with a Michael Jordan. And that's, you're asking an awful lot. Very, very difficult. You brought up, you know, Michael Jordan first, second, whatever. You are in Ohio. You've seen him since he was literally a boy. He is kind of the hometown son, but he left, came back, wins a title, left again. What is kind of the consensus on LeBron James in your part of the country?
I don't know if there is one anymore. I mean, there was in 2010 when he left.
Yeah.
What was that? Yeah. 2010, because he came back in 14. It was like, you got to be kidding me. And he called a big press conference, and he's obviously a great basketball player, and he came back and he won a title, and it's the only title that I have seen of any of my teams in my lifetime. Sure. And he single-handedly in that series destroyed the best team in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, he was the leading, points, block shots, steals, everything.
Yep.
Everything. Kyrie hit the shot. Love had some plays. J.R. Smith gave him 8 points in that game 7 when they needed it. But it was LeBron, right? Sure. He took over that game. He willed that team to a championship. So from that point of view, you know, love him.
Once when you got the title, it was good?
It was good, yeah. When he left for L.A., I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
He hadn't had a lot of success out there. No. I don't know what's going on. But, you know, just the way he took over that game. And the chase down, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable, because, you know, here we are, that Cleveland mentality, and they fought back, and it was, I think they were tied at that point. They were
I
tied.
Think they were. And Golden State couldn't score. It would all, yep.
I'm flaking on his name. Takes off, and I'm like, here we go. This is the one. They're going to put him away, and we're going to fall short again. And I saw him block that shot. I was like, what did I just see? And I've seen it in slow motion. It's like, how in the hell did he do that? That was amazing. And then, you know, you get the three from Kyrie.
Yep.
You get of all things, Kevin Love D'ing up against Steph Curry and Steph missing a three.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you know, time runs out and they won.
I can't even imagine. And maybe it's not your first love team even, but I can't even imagine the feeling that you got. And the closest thing I guess I could have to it, and it's completely unfair, would be when the Colorado Avalanche won their first Stanley Cup here in Denver, because we had had so many Super Bowl losses. We had had, you know, the loss in the 70s. We'd had the losses with Elway. They find that we were like, we don't know what to do. We're not used to being on the side of it.
I was blown away. And again, that you got that mentality, how they're going to blow it. And LeBron gets fouled with like 10 seconds left and they're up by three.
Yeah.
And he starts limping around on his ankle. I'm like, okay, great. Here we go. He's going to miss the free throws. They're going to make a three and we're going to lose this game in overtime. But he made one.
Yeah.
And that was the final. They won by four.
Isn't it interesting though, when you have lost those games, you do have that. Okay. I can see a scenario where we're going to blow this again. And when things go against it, and I'll give you a little bit from my perspective, Super Bowl 32, Packers go right down the field and score. And the very next drive, Terrell Davis busted up the gut for like 7 or 8 yards. Not a huge deal, but you go, oh, this is different. This has a different feel than what we've ever had before. And I know that you had to have felt that year when Kevin Love does play some defense. Kyrie does knock down the big shot. You're like, wait a second, I'm not used to this.
I know. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
I got a friend that lives in, or, well, he grew up in Minnesota and big fan of all the Minnesota fans. And he said he still goes through it.
You know, oh, I bet.
You know, Gary Anderson hadn't missed a field goal all year, misses the one that would have iced a playoff game, et cetera. And so he's still there with the Twins or, it's mostly the Twins and the Vikings for him.
Yeah.
How are they going to blow it again?
It's brutal. And I do understand it. Fortunately, we were able to break out of it, but I went through that same kind of thing. And that was kind of in my formative years. I'm like a teenager and I'm going, oh, what are we going to do this time? We're going to get hammered again. We go, you know, to another Super Bowl, whatever. Going back a little bit to the Cleveland Browns, the Browns go out and they make a deal this year for Deshaun Watson. And we know the baggage that he's bringing with him. What is kind of the feeling back there? And I know that they had the interview here recently with a couple of the people who say they're victims. Not so much to drill down into what he did, because I don't know if anybody knows, but what's kind of the feeling there? Is that, hey, he can help us? Is it, we're not quite sure? What's the feeling on Deshaun Watson being the quarterback for the Browns?
I think he can help.
Now, for sure.
Will he be available this year? I don't know. I was talking with somebody a while ago and they said, you know, would any of this have become a thing had Baker Mayfield, instead of trying to play through an injury, just said, you know what, I need to have shoulder surgery, and they had gone with whoever, right?
And
I don't know the answer to that. I think not. I think he tried to play through it. And I don't know, you know, nobody knows what's going on in that locker room, what kind of an influence he is. I mean, Odell Beckham wanted out, and I was like, well, good, let him go, because this year they were playing San Diego and they would have won that game. 4th and 2, Mayfield hits Beckham in the numbers and he drops the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, you know, you wanted to wonder why he's not throwing it to you that often. It's because you cost him a game. Yeah. Now, having said all that, I also have heard that somebody in the organization said, we need to get an adult to quarterback this team. So I don't know what's going on. And I don't know if they're playing a game of chicken with the Browns and the rest of the NFL on what they can get in trade, but he's still on the roster. So clearly they thought, you know, and they wrote a check to back this up. They thought that they needed to upgrade quarterback above and beyond all else. And quarterback is, you know, it's like no other position in sports.
For sure.
They, what I've read is they think Deshaun is one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL, behind Aaron Rodgers and Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'd go that far, but I know he is. He's one heck of a quarterback.
He is, and he's never been in a good situation either down in Houston. That's been a disaster. Nope. And so understandably, I wasn't sure what the feeling is. I would imagine it's got to be kind of a wait and see, but we know he can help us. Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to watch. And, you know, you talked about it a little bit before. When are you going to have Deshaun? Could that be, you know, later in the year? Could that be? And if so, then maybe they're smarter than everyone thinks by keeping Baker and saying, hey, we've still got a starter if we need it.
Yeah. He insists he won't play for him, but, you know, here's $18 million and your only option is to go out on the field or forfeit $18 million. Right. Why don't you put your money where your mouth is, Baker, and get out there and lead the team?
Yeah.
And it could happen.
Well, and these days, to not play would cost him so much money. To have a holdout these days in that regard, you couldn't do it. You can do it, but it's going to cost you so much. Could he go out there and act like he's hurt? Maybe, I guess. But yeah, he'd have to go out there and step up.
He does. You know, if he goes out, if it comes to pass that he's quarterbacking on this year, and if he goes out and does a great job, then he's going to be in line for a contract.
You're exactly right. Coming back. Okay, so we have talked some about Phil's sports teams and some of his sports memories. But, you know, he has a few other stories to tell. You might not know this, but Phil has been on a very popular game show. And we need to discuss the books that he has written, too. We're going to get to all of that when we get back. Phil, we've talked a lot about sports, and I have felt bad because I really don't mean to twist the knife on you, and I understand some of the pain that you've gone through. But I want to get to a couple other things, because if you're listening right now, you might not realize this. Phil is an interesting guy. He's got a lot of things going, and I've got a couple things I want to ask you about. Phil, back in 2002, you actually made it onto the TV game show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? How does this happen? What is going on? How did you get on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
It was an absolute obsession. It started in 99.
Okay.
When they said you could call in, I would call in and try to get on. And you had to answer three questions, you know, put these states in order from west to east, or put these presidents in order, whatever. And if you got it right, then you were in a drawing to make the next round. And then 10 people from that would make the show. Well, I made the second round once, didn't make the show. And so I never gave up. And what they moved to was an audition type of situation where you would call in, get a spot and audition. So I auditioned in Chicago and they gave you a test. And so I passed the test because it was multiple choice questions, but it was questions that had already played on the show. And I watched every single one of the shows. Oh, so it's like open book test, right? Yeah. So I passed that. And then they did an interview. You fill out an application interview and I failed. All right. So I went to Indianapolis, same deal. Passed the test, failed the interview. So in between Indianapolis and the next one, which just so happened to be in Cleveland, I started looking on the internet, how do you pass a millionaire audition? And what I found out was, you know, they give you a pencil, number two pencil, and a piece of paper to fill out your application. You don't do that. You take a four color pen and you write in red what you want them to ask you about, and you highlight it and all that. So I did that. And then they asked me, you know, because look, once you pass the test, they know you either will or won't answer the questions. They want to see, do you have a story that Meredith Vieira will ask you about?
Yeah.
And I did. At the time, my oldest son was like 5 years old and we were watching Millionaire. And he said, and Regis Philbin was a host. He's like, okay, next on the hot seat. And my son looks at me and goes, Daddy, how hot do they make that hot seat? And so I put that story down, right? Next thing you know, I got a card in the mail. November, my wife and I fly to New York. And I was on the show.
You did pretty well on the show.
$32,000.
I got to ask, what's the question that knocks you out?
So you got a free guess at $64,000.
Okay.
And it was, so real quick, the backstory. When I was in high school, I was on our quiz team, and the advisor kept telling me all year long as we kept playing our quiz matches, nobody on this team knows Greek mythology. You need to learn Greek mythology. Well, I never did. The $64,000 question was Greek mythology. The term mentor comes from Greek mythology. Mentor was friend and trusted advisor to whom? And the choices were Oedipus, Hercules, Odysseus, Achilles. And I don't know if you're...
I'm completely out. No.
So was I, and so were the people I called. I had a phone a friend left. I had a 50-50 left.
Oh, wow.
And so the phone a friend... 30 seconds of silence, the 50-50. Just before I hit the 50-50, I thought, okay, Oedipus had that whole thing with his mom, so he wasn't a hero.
Okay.
And Achilles, the Achilles heel, if they leave Achilles, it's got to be the other one. So yeah. I thought, as long as they don't leave me Hercules and Odysseus, I'm good. Well, it left me Hercules and Odysseus. I guess Hercules, the answer is Odysseus.
Wow. But you did get to 32.
Well, exactly. And I'm sitting backstage going, damn it, why didn't I ever learn Greek mythology? And then I thought, you know what? I just made $32,000.
Yeah. Right. So you did pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, I'm okay. I'm going to be all right.
Imagine your life had you learned the Greek mythology and not gotten 32. No, you made the right trade then.
Yeah, I'm good.
You're fine. You're completely fine on that. Okay, Phil, I've got a couple other things I want to ask you about. In 2015, you had a life-changing experience. Can you talk a little bit about what happened to you there?
Yeah, so 2015, I'm at Boy Scout camp with my youngest son, and I started feeling lousy. And I'm like, you know, I can't make it up the hills. I'm getting short of breath. And I had actually had a friend who had a heart attack a few months before, and he told me how it felt leading up to it. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is everything Tom said he had before his heart attack. But I'm like, you know what? Next week we're going to Vegas. I don't need to worry about it yet. And the week after that, I've got a team meeting in Myrtle Beach. So you know, I'll get around to seeing the doctor. Well, come Thursday, we played this game called Hungry Human Hippos. You know the game Hungry, Hungry Hippos? Yeah, yeah. Well, they do it with humans. And you're wheeling around the room catching softballs and milk cartons, right?
Oh, okay.
And afterwards, I felt terrible. So I went to the nurse and she took my blood pressure and she said, your blood pressure is tanking. It's like 100 over 60. And so they called, which is what your heart will do if it's going through a heart attack, because it doesn't want to pump the blood out.
It wants to slow it down, I guess.
Slow everything down. Slow.
Wow.
So I got a ride in an ambulance to the hospital and they said, yeah, you had a small heart attack. And so I got a couple of stents and about 3 months off work. And so it was as part of the recovery where the book came in. The doctor, you know, I figured, well, I'm a little overweight, not too bad, but a little bit. I'm going to get the lecture about diet and exercise. And he gave me a lecture about stress. And he said, you need to manage stress. I'm like, okay, well, I'll try that. And so what I started doing was putting a social media post out there that said, you know, these are the great things that happened yesterday. And I did it just, you know, when I was on vacation after the recovery and we're at the zoo and oh, here's the great things. We went to the zoo and I just thought, I'll do it this week. And then I thought, well, I wonder how long I can do it. I wonder how long I can find really good things that are happening in life. And the answer is I still do it. So. Yeah, and this is kind of the flip side of the Cleveland sports coin, right?
Sure, where you're sure. Like,
oh, what's going to go wrong? Well, this is kind of every day what went right. And they're such small things. You know, the title is banana milkshakes. I mean, that's a small thing, right? You take a frozen banana and some frozen yogurt and some milk, put it in the blender, and you got a banana milkshake. And, you know, make them for the kids and my wife. And it's just cool little things that make life better.
So you then talk about and discuss a lot in your books and some of it just in life on your social media about stress management, about mental health. Phil, in the last 3 years, we've seen a big, big, I don't know what you'd call it, spike, I guess, in mental health crisis in this country, if not worldwide, and I'm sure it is worldwide. Talking just to the average listener out there, How are we supposed to manage our stress? What should people be doing?
I got a PDF I'll send you. You post in the show notes. I call it the 9 S's of stress management. And
okay. And
one of them is that gratitude, that looking for what's good in life. I call it seek the good, seek the green. You know, color green is kind of a cool color. Another one is subtracting the bad influences. Don't go out of your way to hear bad news. Don't go out of your way to check out all the fights that are happening on social media. You know, social media can be great. I've got a lot of friends that are very positive friends on Facebook, and those are the people I follow. It can be very positive. It can also be the mother of all fights, because, you know, you and I can fight because we don't have to look each other in the face, right? We can just keep flaming each other on social media. And the more you look at it, the higher your stress level goes. And your blood pressure follows. And your health deteriorates when you're doing things like that. And there's several others. Those are the two big ones, right? Find what's good. Because if you turn on the news, they're going to give you what people are paying to see, and it's going to be bad news. I don't care what network. They're going to lead with, here's the latest thing happening in the pandemic. Here's the latest, and you know, tragedy after tragedy. And it's awful, but you know, and I'm not saying stick your head in the sand, but no. you also need to be careful what your focus is and how much you're exposing yourself to that. And then the last one I'll tell you about, the rest will be on the handout.
Okay.
What is start your day off right. So there was a study done by some psychologists from Harvard University on happiness. And what they did was they split the participants into two groups. The first group was given just 3 minutes of bad news to start their day. And the other group was given 3 minutes of solution-focused news to start their day. At the end of the day, 6 to 8 hours later, the group that started with just 3 minutes of bad news was 27% more likely to say they had a bad day. So we have dogs. And so first thing in the morning, you play with dogs and you're on your way to starting the day off.
I absolutely love it. And I think you're hitting on so many things that are so crucial right now during this time. There are so many people right now that have gone down kind of that rabbit hole of depression and getting overburdened with so many news stories that, like you said, you don't want to bury your head in the sand. But how many of those stories truly affect you and are truly necessary? Probably not that many.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and we tend to turn on the news in time to catch the weather and yep. then flip over to a sitcom or something before we go to bed.
It's a much better way to live. And I know that when the pandemic first hit, I was doing the podcast and we were talking about that specifically, saying, I know that I want to know what's happening. I want to know. You kind of have to take a break from some of that stuff because it just becomes a kick in the teeth every single time you turn it on. And you would not deal with any relationship like that in your life. It's just so unhealthy to just get, you know, that barrage of negativity constantly. No, you bring up some really, really good points. Phil, I'm told that you have some music that you recommend to deal with stress. Is this true?
Yeah. So this one works for me personally. And okay. There's a backstory with it. It's so in 2019, my father passed away and it was a long illness in a long fight and he passed away. And so we went to Northern Ohio for the funeral, drove home Saturday evening, Sunday morning. First thing I have to get up and fly across the country to Alberta, Canada. And so that takes all day and I crash and burn in bed. And then the next morning I wake up and it's like 4 o'clock local time. And all of a sudden it hits me. It's like, oh man, you know, dad's gone and so on. And I'm like, I don't know what to do here. Well, I put on my running shoes, went down, hit the treadmill and told Siri to play Waylon Jennings.
Okay.
And I don't know that Waylon is particularly,
relieving
for stress. But the thing of it was, you know, dad was a big country fan and I was not, but we could agree on Waylon Jennings.
Okay.
And so, you know, when I listen to Waylon Jennings, it's no longer my dad, you know, in hospice and then passing away. It's my dad driving us on a trip to Florida and playing Waylon Jennings and kind of just, you're going back and revisiting the good times.
Sure.
And you think about it, there's any number of songs. I've asked people about this, songs that just take you back to a moment and a really cool moment, a really good moment. So with me, in that case, it's Waylon Jennings. There are others, but that one in particular worked for me that day.
That's super interesting. Phil, you have two books out, Great Things That Happen Every Day, and you have Hard to Believe Land. Talk a little bit about both of these books and where can people find these books that want to go out and purchase them?
Okay, so there's my son on the beach.
Okay.
Great Things Happen Every Day cover. That was my credit for the photo goes to my wife. Credit for the cover idea also goes to her. Like, that's brilliant. I love it. So that's the one about just kind of, it follows some of the highlights throughout the year, organized into different areas, like family trips and the highlights we had here and what we learned from that. And and holiday celebrations. And there's a section of dad jokes in there. And so it's just things that make the life better and, you know, why we're doing it and what I've learned from it. And then Hard to Believe Land is the 2016 story of the Cavaliers, who won the NBA championship, the Indians, who won the American League championship, and the Browns, who won a single game.
I love it.
And so it kind of weaves back and forth. You know, it's like, here's what's happening in the season, but that reminds me of the time when I went to the game and saw Gaylord Perry pitch or whatever.
Sure.
And stories like that. Where you can get them is Amazon.
Okay.
The shortcut is philbarthbooks.com. That'll take you to the author page.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, I could sit here and have this conversation all day, you know, talk about sports, talk about a number of different things, talking about life and talking about getting through stress and dealing with, you know, just life in general, which can be a struggle at times for so many people, especially during this time. And at the same time, like you talked about, going out and finding positive things to kind of put your energy into that instead of just dwelling on the negative is such a healthier way to go through life than dwelling on the negative that so many people unfortunately are doing right now. I loved having this conversation with you. It was extremely interesting. And we will be pointing people over to Amazon and hopefully, you know, purchase some more things. But we would love to have you back anytime because I really did. I enjoyed our conversation and talking about all things Cleveland sports. I can feel some of your pain. I can understand some of the things that you went through. I just can't understand it to the extent that you have because you've gone through way more than I have.
But you know, at the end of the day, you just look back at it and laugh. It's how you take anything else. So at the end of the day, when I go to bed, I'm happy at night. So go to bed at night, I'm happy.
That's the bottom line, right?
Good luck to the Avalanche.
Thank you. We're going to need that. It's been an interesting series with the Blues, and they're like the perfect team that we didn't want to face. They're that team that slows things down and mucks things up and makes us play an ugly brand of hockey that we don't really like playing. But yeah, we're hoping to get turned around. You know, looking forward to your teams. I thought Cleveland actually the Cavaliers actually outperformed what we thought. We know the Guardians, they've been that pitching staff every single year over these past few years. You talked about it earlier. They seem to bring it every year. What do you expect from the Browns this year? Do you have any expectations?
If Deshaun is available for at least half the season, I would expect them to be in the playoffs.
I think they have a shot.
They have that advantage of either third or fourth place schedule, which that means the Bengals will be facing three first place teams from divisions when the Browns are facing, like, I don't know, Houston and the Washington football team or Commanders now and whoever the third one is. And so that gives them an advantage over the top two. And so if they got quarterback in play, I expect them to make the playoffs.
I could see that as well. And they should at least be scrappy. It's going to be a matter of when they do end up getting Deshaun. Phil Barth, thank you so much for stopping by the Daily Dose, for sharing your insight, for sharing sometimes your pain and your horror. But thank you so much for stopping by, for sharing your sense of humor and so many things that you brought today. But thank you very much for stopping by the Daily Dose. You are welcome back anytime.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. This was a blast.
Hey, next week on The Dose, the NBA Finals are beginning tomorrow night as the Golden State Warriors will be hosting the Boston Celtics in what should be a pretty entertaining NBA Finals. I'm just hoping we get much, much closer games than we got in the conference finals. But we will be breaking down how that series is going and what we can expect going forward. Plus, we'll have some breaking sports news. We just might have to have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you as well. So be sure you stop by next week and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you so much to author Phil Barth for stopping by and talking Cleveland sports with us, among a host of other things. We would love to have you back again sometime. And you know, if you are interested in finding Phil's books, you can find them over at Amazon, or you can just go to www.philbarth.com, www.philbarth.com, and you can get directly to his work there. But I also want to thank each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to dailydosesports.com and checking out the new things we have going up there every week. But more than anything else, Thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.